Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Sorry. Okay. It's season 5, episode 7 of Lug Radio, the Christmas episode for 2007.
Jingle bells! Jingle bells!
Somebody shoot him.
I'm happy about Christmas. My name is Jono Rudolph Bacon.
My name's Chris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweet.
Oh, why don't you have Christmas middle
Well,
name?
I wanted him to be Prancer.
Because that was the only one I could think of. That's why I don't have...
I'm Adam Dancer Sweet. That's Chris Prancer Proctor.
And I'm Stuart Hanukkah Langridge. Welcome to Lug Radio.
Welcome to Lug Radio. On the show, we are going to be reviewing the new Asus EEE PC, and we're going to be giving one away in a fantastic competition called Pin My Lug Radio, so keep listening.
We're going to review our predictions from last year and make some more, and hopefully they'll be better this year.
Yes.
Yes, let's hope. We're going to do another Lug Radio Top Trumps.
And we're interviewing Alexandre Jouillard from The Wine Project.
You're very cultured, aren't you? Oh, well, but you eat croissants and everything.
I do. I dip bread in oil.
And don't use deodorant.
That's the French.
Yep.
He's anyway, French, isn't he? But he dips his bread in oil.
Get on with it.
Have we changed the license on this show?
Yes.
So that's a perfect opportunity. Bay dipses. Insert offensive remark here. So yes. We've changed the license on this show to the
Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
Yes.
Which means you can make mashups of the show if you want to.
Yes. Yeah, so you can completely misrepresent us in every way possible.
Humiliate us. Yes.
So yeah, that's a public service
announcement. And that's all I have to say about that.
Should we get on?
Let's.
Okay, on the show right now we've got Alexandre Jouillard from Codeweavers, and he's on here to talk about wine. How are you doing, Alexandre?
Good.
Everything
good?
How are
you?
And whereabouts are you based right now? Where are you living?
I'm in Switzerland, in Lausanne.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, first questions first. Obviously, you're on the show to talk about wine. I suppose the very first question is going to be, where the fuck is wine? I mean, where is it? We haven't seen the 1.0 release yet. When are we going to see the 1.0 release, and why is it taking so long?
Well, I've been saying that it's just around the corner, and it has been around the corner for 15 years now. But this time it's for real. We have now a release manager that is building a list of bugs, and once we have the list of bugs, we will fix them, and once all the bugs in the list are gone, then we will have 1.0.
Excellent.
It will be sometime next year.
I was going to say, so it's going to be sometime in 2008?
Yeah, the plan is to release it for the 15th birthday of wine, so in June 2008.
So would you say that 2008 is going to be the year of the Linux Windows desktop?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like the last 10 years.
Fantastic. What's your motivation for working on wine? I mean, what when you get up in the morning and you think, I'm looking forward to another day of re-implementing Windows DLLs, what is it that kind of motivates you to work in the project?
Well, for me, the motivation is working with all people all over the world and seeing what kind of interesting things they come up with. That's really the motivation. Working by myself, I would have quit long ago.
Okay. I was going to ask, I mean, things like WordPerfect and Picasa used Wine as a basically a porting layer, so they didn't have to rewrite all their software for Linux. Are there any other people who do that? How widely used is Wine in that to port Windows software to Linux?
It's not very widely used at the moment for that purpose.
Okay.
Actually, most people who try to do that find out that they can just as well run the Windows binaries and don't do any extra work, and it works just the same.
Okay.
Hiya. I noticed that a lot of the supported applications on the Codeweavers website are quite old. Some of the flagship products like Adobe... sorry, Jonah's pointing at me furiously at the moment to speak into the microphone, sorry. A lot of the applications listed on the CodeWeavers website are a little long in the tooth now, such as Photoshop is a couple of versions behind and so on. Are there newer applications being supported by Wine and CodeWeavers?
Yes, we are always, of course, trying to support new applications, but it's usually the case that older versions work better because we have had more time to implement what they need.
Yeah.
They don't use the latest features. So okay. We tend to be behind, but it's definitely a priority to support newest applications.
Is the Wine, to me, doesn't look like it's making a lot of forward progress. I imagine it looks quite a lot different to you. But is that because Windows is moving forward faster than you guys are, just because Microsoft have got thousands of programmers? Or is it that it's getting increasingly hard to implement the target that you had from the beginning?
Well, I don't think Microsoft is moving faster. I think we are keeping up pretty well.
Oh, right, okay. But
the thing is, Wine is never perfect, so you always have problems, and essentially the progress we make is just fixing bugs one at a time. There's no spectacular new features. Mm. So that's why it doesn't seem to be moving.
Okay, looking back over, you know, you've been doing this nearly 15 years now. What's the thing you were proudest of? The moment when you ran something and it worked, or you finally got something to compile or emulate it properly. What's the moment when you felt most proud of what you've done in the Wine project?
For me, I would say getting the first version of Microsoft Office to work.
I can imagine, yeah.
That was a 16-bit version at the time. And that's when I felt really that Wine was possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that must have been quite an achievement. I mean, related to that point, obviously Microsoft have released Vista, Microsoft have released their new version of Office. I understand that you're looking to release Wine 1.0 next year, but how long is it going to be before in your estimation, before we can start running applications that have been developed for Vista and specifically Office 12? When would you say that's going to be workable on Wine?
Oh, it will probably be a couple of years. Definitely won't be in 1.0.
Right.
But we are pretty close. I mean, we have a number of XP applications, for instance, that works fine now. So we are only a couple of years behind Microsoft, I would say.
Yeah.
Right. Sort of on a similar note, I mean, a lot of the APIs you're trying to re-implement are documented, but then there's also, I believe, I'm told, a lot of stuff that isn't documented. There's a lot of system tools that Word and things use that aren't documented. How do you find out about these things? How do you go about re-implementing them? Or am I completely wrong?
Well, no. For the most part, what happens is that APIs are documented, but they have lots of small side effects and corner cases that are never documented.
Right.
And applications that just tend to rely on these because nobody knows any better. They just try something and it works on Windows, so they ship it.
Right, yeah.
And the way we find out is when an application doesn't work. We investigate what it does and find out it makes a certain call and expects a certain result. And if we don't give the proper result, then we see that there's a problem.
Okay.
Given that you're someone who... most people haven't seen the Windows source code, and obviously you haven't either, but having re-implemented it, you've got an idea of how the thing kind of works internally, maybe. Do you think Microsoft did a good job designing Windows?
Oh, no, definitely not. No, it's a huge piece of crap, and we find more crap every day.
Congratulations on having spent 15 years re-implementing it.
Realize that's
the beauty of it. We try to make something nice out of a piece of crap. That's all the challenge.
Yeah, and good work.
Yeah, fantastic. One other thing in terms of your work, naturally, you've been working to re-implement Windows, and I can imagine that that's maybe caused some controversy for some of our more freedom-loving friends in the open source free software community.
In the Ginger community.
Yeah, have you had a lot of grief from people for the fact that you work on re-implementing, on producing Wine? Do you get a lot of hassle from people about that?
Yes, we do get our share. Every time Wine is mentioned or Slashdot, we get all the Slashdot folks saying that it's a bad thing and look at where OS2 got and stuff like that. But we have a lot of users, so there are a lot of people who feel we are doing something useful.
The thing is, as well, is, I mean, naturally, I don't want you to stop working on Wine. I mean, you're doing a fantastic job, but do you sometimes think, why am I doing this if I'm getting all of this grief from some of these more vocal people in our community?
No, that doesn't really affect me. As long as I see people using it and being happy with it, that's fine. I can ignore the other people.
Cool. I mean, the one thing I use Wine for, I do a lot of web development stuff, and I'm running IE6 on top of Wine. There's someone did a thing called IEs for Linux, which downloads and installs Wine, and that's absolutely fantastic. I've never noticed a difference between using IE6 on Linux and using it on Windows, and you did that, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so thank you. It's been great to have you on the show. People should go to, is it winehq.org? Okay, and presumably you're always looking for new hackers for the project.
Oh, yes. You could always use more people.
Fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks very much for coming on the show, Alexandre.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Cheers. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fasten your seatbelts. Not live from Wolverhampton, it's Lug Radio Top Trumps!
Welcome to Lug Radio Top Trumps, and in this episode we're going to be looking at the same five criteria that we did in the last show and assessing someone on their Top Trump scores. So the first criterion is freedom crusading. Do they like to crusade towards freedom, preferably with a beard? The second thing is tinkering. Do they like to play with things and put little Allen keys into sockets? Like Chris P. Proctor, the Lord of the Rings. The third thing is the underdog. Do they like to support people who are a bit shit? Like Tiny Sofa Linux. The fourth thing is communitization of community using community tools to promote community tools. Do they like the community? I certainly do. And the last thing is, are they cheap? Cheap and cheerful like every resident of Wolverhampton. Over to you, Graham.
This week's contestant, Adam Sweet from Wolverhampton.
Yay! Woo! Woo! Woo!
Adam's scores are freedom crusading, 4, tinkering, 7, underdog, 8, communitization, 7, and cheapness, 6.
So, Adam, you're kind of into tinkering, but you're really mainly into Linux because of the underdog status.
The
underdog.
The underdoge is the very underdoge. Important to me.
The underdoge.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a sucker for things that give me just a cause to hang my hat on, as it were. Mm. And I like playing with toys, just playing with stuff. I like the intellectual challenge of getting things working, and I don't like being defeated by
it. Now, you see, the thing is, I remember when I first met Adam, he came to the Wolves Lug, and I remember you came along, and I think you said it in the last show that Linux was your first real experience of using computers, wasn't it? Because you didn't have a computer beforehand.
No, I had a Windows 98 PC for about 9 months.
Yeah.
And I rabidly absorbed information, because I was given it by my cousin to do my college work on.
Right.
I just stopped going back to college after my band had broken up. And I was far more interested in actually figuring out how it worked and how it did what it did than doing any work on it. And so I started buying hundreds and hundreds of computer magazines.
So that's kind of like a tinkering sort of thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
So that's your tinkering side.
Yeah, hence the tinkering score being quite high up.
The underdog thing is coming in a second. And I bought all these computer magazines. I'll probably buy maybe 2 or 3 a week, maybe 4. And within the first, say, 3 or 4 months, I started seeing Linux appearing. And it just sounded so obscure.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this sounds interesting to me. And, I mean, this is where probably 2000, 2001.
Sorry.
Pardon you.
I appear to be allergic to your bullshit.
Linux at the time, Linux just started to break into the mainstream IT press.
Roughly?
It was 2000. Early 2000.
Right,
I think there was a CD of Coral Linux appeared on, I don't know, PC something.
Hmm. That was a success, wasn't it?
Yeah. And later in the year, I came across an issue of the first issue of Linux Format. And right. I just thought, well, fucking hell, there's a real magazine about this.
Was that when it was Linux Answers?
No, this was the first issue of Linux Format. And I bought it, and it just sounded so obscure, I was absolutely fascinated by it, even though I knew straight away that I wasn't going to understand a thing. For a couple of months.
So is Linux now too mainstream for you? Are you now looking to move to QNX or something? Do you yearn for the days where you had to compile your own xorg.conf?
No.
BSD people are calling your name at this point.
I think, right, we are the cool new people on the block. As
cool is a relative term.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, if you see the Mac versus PC spoofs with the Linux geek turning up in a backpack and like scrawny little git with a pair of... real little pair of penfold glasses.
Oh, good,
glasses.
That was you.
Yeah, yeah. Arsehole. no, I think Linux is really picking up speed, and it's kept me hooked. The thing is, there's always more to learn.
As it gets more popular, if it ever breaks mainstream and we get like kind of the year of the desktop actually happens, will you kind of lose interest? Will that become less interesting? Or
I won't lose interest, I don't think. This is, again, the tinkering thing was quite high in my scores. Yeah. I don't think I'll lose interest in Linux while there are still things to master.
Do you think that part of it is, I mean, in terms of the underdog thing, is sticking with it until it becomes mainstream, because then you feel like you did back the underdog and you were right to back the underdog because it's become the mainstream thing.
I'll be
and
quite then, happy with that.
And yeah, because, I mean, the impression I get from you is that if I was to guess your top Trump scores, it would broadly line up with what we've got here. The one thing that surprised me a little bit is your community score is quite high, and I wouldn't have plumped you to be quite so high in the community, because I'd put you far more as a tinkerer. I'd kind of like take away from the community and put more towards the tinkering.
I think, right, I mean, I certainly learned a lot of what I know now and how to go about things from just hanging around on the Wolves Lug mailing list, and I think if I hadn't have had that, I would have got bored quite quickly by not being able to do the things I wanted to do and having no one to ask about how to go about doing them, I would have got bored quite quickly.
The interesting thing about that is you very seamlessly made the transition from bloke asking the questions to bloke answering the questions. So is that you feeling like you want to put back?
Yeah.
I mean, putting something back.
I mean, well,
which is a community kind of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it not?
I mean,
you're so obsessed with that bloody Asus E thing that you go community.
Sorry, I hate to be rude, but this is about me. Nobody else. This is about me.
Look at him.
Shut up, Mike.
The point I was making earlier was basically, if it hadn't been for the fact that there's this kind of community around Linux that I could be part of, I wouldn't have got to where I am now.
Yes.
I wouldn't have learned what I learned to get. I wouldn't probably wouldn't be in this room. But also, what were you saying, sorry?
About how you started answering people's questions. You've gone from being someone who needed to ask a lot of questions to now you've got the knowledge. You seem to feel the urge to pass it on a lot more than a lot of people. You answer a lot more questions than I do, say, or Jono does, or Chris does.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to happen about 3-4 years ago that I really started picking up speed, and it seemed to happen overnight. It was quite strange to
Then
me.
It was heroin, and then it was cocaine.
No, it's
Linux,
just
a gateway drug.
Yeah, so no, it's just a cold I've got. it seemed to happen pretty much in the space of a couple of months, and I see the value in what the Linux, well, the Wolves Lug specifically, but what Lugs allowed me to learn, and I quite enjoy being able to explain the same things to other people in the hope that they'll take the same path that I did.
I think the thing is, and without wishing to inflate your ego too much, I think you are the perfect example of what open source and Linux can do for people. Mm-hmm. You came to the Lug and you knew fuck all about computers, and now you're a sysadmin and you've got a decent job and you're doing well, and you know you're on a rate, you're in podcasts and all kinds of stuff, you're doing really well, and not wanting to sound patronizing, but you went there and you didn't know anything.
No.
And you went to a Lug and it really helped, and it just shows you what lugs and what the community and all the rest of it can do for people. And I think it's a fantastic example. I mean, I think you're probably the purest example I've seen, because most people I've seen who go to a lug already know about Linux.
Interesting question there, though, is that a lot of the open source community seem to feel that that's the way everybody using Linux should be. You start off not knowing anything about computers, and you end up being a system administrator and getting involved and learning about stuff and then passing on that knowledge. But there's a lot of people who aren't interested in letting Linux become as much part of their lives as Adam has. I mean, do you think that's a problem? Do you think that we do expect everyone to be like you and most people aren't? Or do you think everyone should be like you?
I'd love to think that everyone ought to be like me.
I don't know if there's enough hair gel in the world.
No, there isn't.
I'd have to cut 2 inches off the top of me fucking head for a start.
I mean, the thing is, I can be a little bit obsessive when I've got the bit between my teeth, as it were. I don't like, until I've mastered something, I don't like kind of letting go. And so, I mean, I just carried on further and further down the path, as it were. It'd be nice to think that other people would like to do the same kind of thing. But I also know a lot of Linux people that I've tried to encourage, or people I've come across that use Linux but don't involve themselves in other sections of the Linux using community. They're just not interested in it, and that I don't understand. But
that's kind of like the true, pure hacker ethic, isn't it? Yeah. It's the fact that, you know, you kind of get interested in something, and then, like a dog with a bone, you don't let go with it until you've learned everything about it. I mean, I remember when I was younger, printing out, like, you know, directory listings and trying to learn what the files did. And I know loads of people who've done the same sort of thing, you know, and it's kind of like that kind of, like, you, I think, again, are a great example of the fact that you just have learned one thing after another, like... Mm-hmm. At lug meetings, remember you'd come like, oh, I've been playing around with this, been playing around with that.
Yep.
And that's the great thing about it, you know.
I mean, half the reason why I wanted to do this kind of segment is because I just wanted to explore, again, as we said, why we end up doing this thing all the time. And I really do. I spend probably 10 hours a day.
And why do you think you do that? If you were to give one reason why you get up and get enthusiastic about Linux... Distilling your five different types of...
I can't give you one single answer. I think, first of all, is the fact that I'm a little obsessive about something that attracts my attention. We haven't actually mentioned it. The cheap thing. The thing that I think... one of the things that really encouraged me to stay doing what I'm doing is the fact that it puts the tools I like to play with in my hands at no cost.
It's interesting. I mean, one thing that we did remark on, we sat there and thought about the different reasons people might get involved, and that's where our five categories came from. And Adam's the most evenly distributed across them.
Easily.
In some ways. I mean, he's interested in tinkering. He's interested in being an underdog. He's interested in community. He's interested in cheapness. So there is, like you say, there probably isn't one reason for you. There's not one thing where if it went away, you'd stop doing it.
No. I mean, if it stopped being free, as in beer, that would piss me off quite a lot.
It would slow you down, but it wouldn't actually stop you, I think.
I mean,
I would a lot less often.
I would, if Linux stopped being free as in beer, tomorrow, I'd go and pay for Linux. Right. I would.
Yeah. So if Linux was free as in beer, not free as in speech, would you be happy with that? Is the free as in speech? Because you're not much of a freedom crusader. So would you be happy if you could just get the binaries for free?
So score 4.
It would disappoint me. I'm not a programmer, unfortunately. Chris, you were going on about reading the network block.
Oh, yeah. Reading kernel source code just for fun.
Yeah.
Ladies, form a queue.
I'm a terrible programmer. Reading the source code is of no real value to me, but I see the benefit that has provided me in that other people have been able to provide me with tools that I can enjoy playing with.
So it's kind of a no direct use to yourself, but the fact that other people can do that means...
And it's a means to an end rather than
an end to itself. I see Axe Point clearly that binary drivers and things are a bad thing, but unfortunately I can't live without them. To me, there are things I want to do with my computer that I need the binary drivers for.
Exciting new thing that's come out recently is the Asus EPC. Stupid bloody name for it. It's down something like excellence, extravagance, and
excrement,
or something like that. I don't think it's excrement. Anyway, what it is
is just put the Poo Commando, the German Poo Commando, endorse it.
I don't know. I haven't asked him.
Hi, I'm the German Poo Commando, and you're using the Asus EPC.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
I'm the German Poo Commando. So,
immensely unlikely to happen, though. Anyway, if I could drag you gentlemen back to the point,
please do.
Please do.
What it is it's a small form factor laptop. It's got a 7-inch screen, 4 gig solid state drive in it. It's dead cheap. Here in the UK, it's £220. In the US, it's $220, which seems perfectly fucking fair to me, I don't think. Thanks a lot, ISIS.
Although there is one difference. Their currency is worthless right now.
That's the point. It's even cheaper.
So they basically give them away with free with cornflakes in the US, and we pay £220.
That's about £110, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really unfair. But anyway, and
they put freedom in the water over there.
One of the important things about this, they take freedom out of the water over there, don't they?
They put communism in the water over here.
Let's call it socialism, or being a liberal, I believe Americans call it.
Meanwhile, back at the point.
Meanwhile, back at the point, one of the interesting things from our perspective, in addition to it being a nice cheap laptop, is that it comes, by default, running Linux.
It does.
It's running a Linux distribution. You can get it with Windows XP if you're prepared to pay extra, and you say on your order, I want it with Windows XP. But if you just say, I want an EEPC...
You get nearly XP.
You get a Linux one.
Linux XP.
So, one of the nice things about it is that we were sent one to review.
We were.
So, first of all, thank you to Dale from Efficient PC
for sending
us one to review. And not Chip. I thought, blimey, is there a guy called Chip there? I didn't realise that.
They are the EEPC Rescue Rangers.
Carry on.
So, chaps,
we get in there, slowly but surely.
So, we've been playing with the EEPC.
We have.
Yes. Gentlemen, what did you think of it?
It's fucking brilliant.
It's brilliant.
It really is. I mean, I first saw an EEPC when I was over in the US at the Developer Summit, and one of my colleagues had one, and I only saw it for about 5 seconds, and I didn't really have a chance to look at it. So tonight was really the first time I got a chance to see it. And it really is an incredibly incredible piece of kit. I mean, the build quality is phenomenal.
It's sturdy, isn't it?
And the operating system is stunning. I mean, it's great.
Well, it's Linux. Of course it's stunning.
I mean, it's got a webcam in there. It's got 3 USB ports. It's, like you say, it's got 4 gig solid-state disk. It's got built-in Wi-Fi. Speakers, Wi-Fi, network port, modem with a little thing over the top, so we're not sure if it actually works. but it's a stunning piece of kit.
It is Linux for normal people, so much so that you would probably, if you didn't know what Linux was, you wouldn't know that you were running anything other than your everyday PC. Interface is simplified, but you wouldn't know it's anything less than a normal laptop.
Well, yeah, I mean, the key point about this, I think, the interface... is it doesn't give you a normal desktop. It basically gives you a menu with tabs with big icons on it, and then to run an application, you just click on one of the big icons. Mm. And it comes with a full suite of applications. There's OpenOffice on it. There's Skype. There's a web browser, which is Mozilla. There's loads of other stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not like they've said, okay, we're going to provide people with the desktop, but we're going to simplify it so they understand it or whatever. They've gone, okay, let's provide a different interface. Now, part of this is because its screen's quite small, so a desktop would feel a little bit cramped.
It does,
but I like the fact that they've gone in a slightly different direction. They, instead of saying, well, okay, how can we take a KDE desktop or a GNOME desktop and make people understand it, and one way of doing it is make it look like Windows, they've said no, a better interface for this would be this clickable thing.
It's a really beautiful interface as well.
The thing is that stands out for me is that having this simplified interface, you would think it feels restrictive. And it really doesn't. I was trying to think while we were looking at it earlier. What would I want to do on a laptop or a PC that isn't here? And I couldn't see a lot that wasn't there. I mean, we've already said it's a 4 gig solid state disk, so you're not going to be storing gigs and gigs of data on it. But that's not what it's
Although
for.
You can put SD cards in, as we proved.
Or a USB external hard drive if you wanted to.
But nothing stuck out to me.
A USB stick,
Nothing stuck out to me that I wouldn't be able to do on it. And as I guess we've all looked at it and we haven't done this, but you can actually, there is a way of dropping it down to a full desktop environment if you want to.
Yeah.
But, of course, the only people who are going to want to do that are the people that know you can do that in the first place.
I tell you what, the thing is, when I switched it on earlier on and I was playing with it, the thing, when I saw the interface and I saw like just the big icons and the tabs for the different types of application or settings or whatever, I was thinking, this is going to piss me off. And from actually using it, I was amazed how flexible it is, and, yeah. and how it didn't piss me off. And Chris and I had a bit of a conversation, sort of saying, "We could actually imagine this as
yeah.
as running on your desktop machine."
It I really should really was. Imagine a sort of a tabbed window manager that just has
it was yeah,
lots of tabs and loads of icons.
And it was really it's kind of like a PDA in some ways, and like with Qtopia, you know how you'd have tabs and then you'd have the little icons on there. But it's stunning. The thing that the biggest surprise I've found with the EEPC is just the build quality. Usually, if you yes. buy something that's yeah. cheap, you expect it to be a bit tacky.
And this is not just cheap. This is really yeah. cheap. I mean, this is a fully functional, full-on laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
It's small, but that's the point of it. And it's £200. There's nothing in this country you could buy that's that cheap.
And the thing is, to really hammer the point home, it's really, really cheap, and it's really, really good quality. Yes. It feels like an unbelievably well-made, sturdy piece of kit. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. it feels stronger than any laptop I've owned.
One thing I didn't like about it when I first looked at it was there isn't like a locking catch on the lid when you put the laptop lid yeah. down. And then it became apparent it's because you don't need one because yeah. it closes shut quite firmly.
Yeah, when it closes, there's kind of that little snap bit in the hinge where it kind of closes most of the way and then it goes over a little nodule or something and yeah, then yeah. and then snaps closed.
Nodule.
I mean, I have to
say, that's something that dogs have when they're ill.
I'm trying to think of a word.
One thing I did find, because it is twice smaller, obviously the keyboard is twice smaller, and I yeah. have sort of pudgy fingers, and I found that quite tricky to try to type on. I suspect you get used to it after a little while, yep. but kind of you have I to think be quite accurate on your typing.
I mean, I own a Vio, and it's a small Vio, and at first, when I first started using it, I thought, I'm never going to get used to this keyboard. And kind of a couple of days using it, you kind of get used to it. And
yeah.
I suspect with the EPC is a little bit smaller. I can imagine you pretty much get used to it, but if you had, you know, big fingers, you know, then it could be a problem. But like Axport, can we say?
No.
Okay. It's not what I was just about to say.
Idiot.
But, she doesn't listen to this.
You don't know that's the case. Moving on.
But anyway, if say
that would be the nobody impact. Nobody specific listens to this.
Yeah. So if for the sake of argument, a child was to listen to this episode, it's a very small machine, and it would be very suited. I mean, we were talking about kids, and it'd be very yeah. suited towards kids.
I mean, a lot of it is actually sort of aimed at kids. I mean, I know you can buy them in Toys R Us.
Yeah.
For example.
The interesting thing I think about that is that. Yeah, I mean, one of Asus's big target markets is kids. One of their resellers here in the UK is RM, who do all the machines for schools. They're yeah. big in the education market. So they're obviously looking at aiming this at least partially towards kids. And the interface is very usable by people who aren't particularly experienced yes. with computers. But it's not like a kid's interface. It doesn't yeah. talk down to you and be patronising.
Yeah. It's not patronising.
It's not kind interface. Of, you know, my first operating system kind
exactly
of approach.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's perfectly usable for kids. With a little bit of instruction on what email is and things like that, but it's not a Fisher Price My First Computer type
no,
laptop, is it?
Yeah. It's a proper.
In the same way, you know, like the analogy I have there is movies like Toy Story, where they're really appealing to kids, but they've also got like this underlying undercurrent of adult humour yes. there,
yeah,
and they appeal to all audiences. And it's like the thing I've always also thought about that machine is that typically when people, I mean, it's running Linux, right, and when companies bring out a new device that's running Linux, they're typically a bit ropey. And I can honestly say that's a fucking good job.
You could give that to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like a second or third generation product to me. It feels like they've been through and fixed all the problems. Like it suspends and resumes really quickly, it boots really quick. All of the applications feel integrated, it looks integrated, it looks the business. The Windows XP type borders around the edge is a bit dodgy, but you know, it feels like it's been through a
when you're criticising
product.
The window decoration, well, yeah, really onto
you're
it.
Really, you're really clutching at straws.
Along that thought, yeah. to me, like I didn't like that either, but I think it was a good choice given the target market.
Mm.
People won't. You look at it and you feel normal. People will feel familiar in it. And another thing that Ak and I noticed is that when you open Office, you go to save something, it saves it in .doc format, which maybe
oh,
we
really?
Would, yeah.
Hates freedom, but it's quite useful.
Yeah. Yeah. But normal people...
Sandros, what do you expect?
You don't want to have to explain that to normal people.
Yeah, you I mean, I can see that. The idea about the device is that you put it in, you know, a kid's hands and they can go, oh, I'll do a PowerPoint presentation and show it at school. You don't want to have to give them the little 30-second chalk talk on the yeah. difference between ODT and .doc format because they don't care.
This raises another issue. I mean, something that Axe said is that... this would be an ideal conference laptop for people who, you know, either traveling or doing presentations or just because it's so small and it's pretty light, even with the battery in there. Yeah. It's something that you could throw in the back of a, like I've got a small Ubuntu backpack and it'd be great to put in there, which is one of the reasons why I use the VAIO. But one of the problems with it is that the resolution is non-standard, so it might...
Yeah, the resolution is 800 by 480 because it's a very small screen. And that'd be a bit weird. I've read about people who plugged it into projectors and so on. So you've got quite a small resolution, which is a little bit of a problem.
What are the, I mean, we've hailed the great points of this machine. What things do we think we could improve on? I mean, the webcam's a little bit ropey, but it's good for a bare minimum for video conferencing.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's designed for video conferences. It's not designed so you can be Francis Ford Coppola with it.
Yeah.
The only two things I don't like about it, and this is not its fault in so much as they're there by design, both Ak and I thought, I could, when I looked at photos of it, I could never understand why there's this great big black border around the screen taking up all this screen real estate that isn't screen. And it turns out those are the speakers.
Yeah.
It would be nice to find somewhere else for those to be so you could have that extra screen space.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they did it the way they did it, because I think if you had... I mean, the block that the screen is in could probably fit a 9 or 10-inch screen rather than a 7-inch screen. But if you put a 9 or 10-inch screen in it, then I'm sure you'd lose half an hour on the battery life and you'd add 50 quid to the price of the laptop.
Yeah. And also, I couldn't see anywhere else they could put the speakers, really, apart from perhaps under your hands when you're on the keyboard.
Yeah. Although we're supposed to be hammering to it, just on a related point, a lot of laptops that I've used in the past where the hinges on the screen where you move it up and down, typically they can break quite easily on a lot of laptops, and more laptops than they should.
Yeah.
And another thing I noticed about that is that it was really strong.
Yes.
I can't imagine that happening to that.
Again,
laptop.
That's just the build quality of mentioned. It does feel really sturdy.
Another minor issue with it is that it gets quite warm through the keyboard when you're using it. I've spent a bit longer using it than you guys, and it does get quite warm. I think I suspect that's because it's got a load of gear in it, all in a very small space.
It's a Celeron 900 processor, which I don't think went particularly cool.
Yeah. So the keyboard does get quite warm when you've been using it for a bit.
Important point. Tested, what's it called now? Tux Racer.
Planet Penguin Racer.
3D performance, there's 3D acceleration in there. It's a bit bumpy, but it's acceptable.
I mean, minor flaw from my perspective, but this is quite specifically from my perspective. People have tried doing things like putting Ubuntu on it and so on, and it worked fine. I mean, I'm sure Fedora would be exactly the same. But as far as I'm aware, there aren't open drivers for the wireless in it. You have to use NDIS wrapper. Something else I think I would like to say here is that Asus appear to be becoming... a good part of the community. They made a couple of small screw ups about things like when they brought the thing out, there was some code which they should have released under the GPL and they didn't.
But
as soon as people called them on it, they did it. And I don't get the impression they were avoiding doing it until they were called on it. I think it was a genuine mistake and they tried to rectify
it as soon as
they
could. That was most people's perception.
In the same way, there's a little sticker on the bottom which says if you open this flap, you void the warranty, which is the flap you need to open to upgrade the memory yourself. And Asus have now said, we're sorry, that's not the case anymore. Don't worry about it. I think they're trying. It's a bit of a new experience for them, but they're trying to think we're going to be decent Linux citizens.
Yeah, I think they've been slightly surprised by the number of geeks who want one. I think they really designed it for kids and then done, oh, God, the rest of the world wants it as well, and now they're trying to catch up with it. How many did you say
they've sold?
I heard somewhere, and this was a couple of weeks ago, that they'd sold 100,000.
But I
might be wrong on that, but that's what I heard.
I mean... credit where credit's due. It's a fucking superb piece of kit, and they've done an excellent job on
the... I've had the advantage of... I've actually seen this run KDE, just some of the work. Full desktop mode, yeah. And the screen really is quite small, and a lot of the applications that aren't kind of specifically come with it... The ones that specifically come with it seem to be okay, but the ones that you get from full desktop mode aren't really designed to run on screens that small, so you get kind of... properties boxes that go off the screen, and you have to actually move the whole window so you get to the OK button.
Yeah, although to be honest with you, my dad has that problem on his 800 by 600 desktop.
Yeah.
The only I was thinking, probably we've all been fascinated about this. I've read a lot of reviews on it because I really seriously considered getting one. purely, as you said, just so it's something you can just throw in a bag, because, you know, I've got the fucking Uber Megatron laptop.
It's the size of a small country.
7 tons of blue LEDs.
Yeah, it's big. Yeah, that's true. It is big, big and heavy. And I really thought about getting one of these just so I can chuck it in the bag, portable workstation.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sysadmin, all it needs is a command shell.
And it does have a terminal.
Yeah, so. It does have a terminal. And the only thing that puts me off getting one is the fact that the keyboard is just a little bit too small for me to be able to type quickly, which is what I'd need to be doing on it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the terminal thing. Just very briefly, they've made it so the terminal is like Control Shift and T or something. So someone who gives a toss about things like terminals can find that out really quickly. But someone who doesn't even know what a terminal is never going to trip over it by accident and start up a thing. And go, what the hell is this black thing? I don't understand it.
Yeah,
so all in all, we all think brilliant device.
Brilliant. Right. Brilliant.
Well done.
Brilliant.
Well
brilliant.
Done, Asus.
It is an extremely good job. Well done. So. Important. We think it's a brilliant machine. Dale from Efficient PC has sent us one, and we want to give it away, don't we?
He has. He didn't just send us it for review. He sent us it to give it away.
So we want to give this out. You know, when we review stuff, we'd like to give it out to the loyal Lug Radio fan base. So keep listening. Later in the show, we're going to have a little segment where we're going to have a fantastic competition which everybody can enter, and you could win yourself this fantastic EEE PC. It's Christmas time, and it's that time of the year, the Lug Radio predictions.
Indeed.
We've been wrong again, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, it has changed slightly, because last year we obviously had Matt and Aid rather than Chris and Adam.
The we. I mean, you have been wrong.
So they've been wrong.
So they were wrong, and we were wrong too, but we can't hand out too much beating.
It's over to Graham.
Shut up.
For a quick reminder.
Shut up.
Fucking Graham. Right, I'm going to whistle through these last year, because we didn't do very well, to be frank.
You just Graham a second ago.
No.
Fuck off. Waka waka.
I said, we're going to see more proprietary companies getting software into Linux distros like Opera and so on, which basically meant...
Was that a dream?
You know, the Dapper commercial repository for Ubuntu. I expected to see loads more proprietary stuff in there, and in fact, there was none more, and no one cares about the commercial repository. So, wrong for me. Matthew P. Revell said we're going to see non-free drivers in distros become way more important, and there's going to be this huge big divide in between free distros and non-free distros. I'm not sure the existence of Gobuntu counts, to be honest with you.
No.
So wrong again.
Revell, wrong.
Bacon said that we'll see Adobe release one of the Macromedia authoring tools on Linux, the Flash Editor, Photoshop, or Macromedia Director, and you could not have been more wrong about that.
The wrongness.
Okay. Fuck off.
Aren't you wrong every year as well?
Yes.
It's a tradition.
Yes.
Aid said that multimedia on Linux would be solved by this time.
Now, I suspect
he'd try and make some kind of pathetic claim that the Easy Codec installer that Fedora's got and Ubuntu's got and everybody's got now.
It's
would,
a lot more
would qualify.
It's a lot more solved than it
I
was.
I think it's a good stretch down the road, isn't it? Last year, but it's not the end.
Solved is maybe a bit optimistic.
Solved is a bit of a push, to be honest with you. I see the auto package people would give up. They'd shut down autopackage.org, and they have not done so. They don't appear to have done very much over the last year, and I think they are. You know, their enthusiasm for the project is dying, but they didn't shut down the thing, so I lose again.
Yep.
Revell said that we're going to see more people using the term open source for commercial reasons, but not actually being open source, or we're going to see them releasing something that's three versions behind.
That's a pony prediction.
It was not only a pony prediction, but wrong as well, as far as I can tell. So, bad luck, Revelator.
I'll be back with my marketing skills.
Mr. Bacon says, we're going to see distro consolidation. Basically, it will go down to essentially two distributions, Fedora and Ubuntu. We'll see Debian and SUSE become completely irrelevant.
I said completely irrelevant. I said less relevant, and I believe that is correct.
You said a lot less relevant. Relevant.
Which it is.
No, it just isn't.
It is. Yeah, because everyone uses Mandriva. Oh, beard. That's right.
Did I mention Mandriva? Debian and SUSE, you said?
Yeah, but the SUSE thing... I mean, anyway, move on. we'll just for the sake of argument,
We'll just say you were wrong there.
Yeah.
The Balshaw said that we'd have a year of backlash against various distros. Oracle, Unbreakable Linux would go away. People would move away from Ubuntu. There'd be a huge Novell backlash. The honeymoon period for Ubuntu would be over.
Not so much, really.
Not so much.
Quite a bit of beard in there.
And then, are you ready for this? Right, hold on to something. Oh. Revell said AMD would release open source ATI drivers. and Jono and Aid mocked him mercilessly,
yep.
and they were wrong. And Ravel was right. Well
this
done,
This is
Ravel.
A point of contention, because I'm fairly convinced Ravel said, or was assuming and insinuating, that they'd open sourced their FGLRX.
I listened to this today, and I thought Ravel was suggesting that maybe it wouldn't be FGLRX, but there would be an ATI driver.
I think he just said there would be a open source driver released from OEM.
But anyway, let's be frank, to be honest with you. We didn't do very fucking well. Now we've replaced 50.
We're arguing about whether it's 1 out of 10 or 9 out of 10.
We've now replaced 50% of the team because we were so shit at predictions last year. So I'm expecting you two, Adam and Chris, to hold up our end this year. Doomed. So let's go with our predictions for 2008.
We should stress here that we've divided the predictions into two categories. Concrete predictions, where we can actually, because the problem with this is that it's fairly subjective with our previous predictions. So we've got concrete predictions where you can absolutely state whether that's happened or not.
We have a measurable deliverable,
and then we've also got bullshit predictions where they're a little more fluffy
and they use words like relevant, so we can argue about whether it actually happened or not.
Significant. So alright, so let's start with the concrete predictions. So Adam, do you want to start?
Well, I reckon the patent case between IP Innovation LLC and versus Red Hat and Novell, if it comes to conclusion this year, we will lose.
What's this the case about?
Right, IP Innovation LLC, as I have written down in front of me, because I knew I couldn't remember that.
Internet Technology Limited.
have taken Red Hat and Novell to court over a user interface patent, which is basically the multiple desktops.
Okay, virtual desktop.
Which was originally owned by Xerox. But I'm sure they've successfully sued Apple over a similar thing.
Didn't Xerox originally own anything that's graphical on a screen? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Anything that was worth having
Xerox
a graphics.
Xerox didn't patent all of it.
We should maybe swiftly move through these.
Well, I think if that comes to fruition, ends this year, we're going to lose.
We're losing.
Because they beat Apple.
It'll be interesting to
don't
see.
Don't use them anyway.
I don't want to discuss it too much, but it'll be interesting what happens if we do lose. I don't understand what losing would mean to
I think it's just going to end up like a codec thing where it's a plugin or something. But
A virtual desktop plugin, not many people going to install that one. Yeah.
Just to bolt this onto the end, because that may not come to fruition this year. I think we're going to see a lot more of these cases in the next year.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Christoph, man of in rings.
Nice.
What?
Man of in rings. Lots of rings.
Shut up. I think this year we're going to see the first serious Linux-based virus threat. So either a kind of an email virus where people click on the, you know, delete my hard drive .exe or
.sh.
That'd be delete my hard drive .sure, yeah.
I wonder how many people would run that.
Probably more than you think. This is my point. But I think we will see the first significant occurrence.
Yeah, and you weren't talking about like a sendmail bug or an Apache bug or something like that. You were talking about
a proper virus.
Linux desktop.
Yeah, a desktop thing. So are we talking about sort of SQL Slammer, but for PostgreSQL?
I think it could be either, but it will be kind of, it will have a significant effect. It won't be like a theoretical thing where someone's created one and, you know, it could work if only it was released in the wild.
Delete my home partition. Kind of idea. Delete the contents of my home.
Something
directory.
Serious that actually will get out into the wild and will infect a serious number of computers. Tens of thousands of kind of machines.
Okay. I have a prediction, and my prediction is that Linspire are going to get out of the distro business. I think that they. I don't think the company will necessarily dissolve, but I think that they will get out of producing a Linux distribution. I think FreeSpy will still exist because it's a community distribution, but they will take their primary business by this time next year will not be Linux distributions. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's click and run or if it's maybe working with ISVs or something else. I actually suspect, this isn't my prediction, but I suspect they will head more towards click and run. But I think they will they will get out of producing the Linux distribution.
See, that's interesting because they're the only ones with big deployments. Walmart do Linspire PCs.
They're not the only distro with big deployments.
The thing is, now we're seeing all these other Linux devices, PCs and laptops, devices appearing. I think they are going to be less relevant.
Yep.
But another thing, I'm not sure how long FreeSpire is going to survive without Linspire.
Yeah,
it would be interesting to see how long a community distribution will last without this kind of commercial backup.
Yeah, I mean, there's I have various way beyond, well, there's lots of reasons why I've had this prediction. Not any time to discuss it right now. Aquarius.
Okay, my concrete prediction is you will see at least one credible news source say that there are more Linux desktop users than Mac users by the end of 2008.
Right. So the argument's going to be over credible news source.
So we can possibly
almost immediately exclude the Register from this.
And indeed, lugradio.org.
But if it's the Financial Times, we may kind of believe it a little bit
that
more.
That was going to be really handy, actually. You shouldn't have said that. You could have just dropped it on before the last show.
We are in nowhere credible. I mean, this is sort of twofold prediction. The first part is someone will say that, but secondly, you'll have Linux being talked about by credible news sources, and they'll be saying there are actually more people using this than the Mac. I don't think they're going to say more people than Windows.
Essentially, this will be a credible set of numbers that say it. Rather, exactly. Even if the Financial Times say it, and it's like their April Fool's joke, it doesn't count.
But if they believe it to be the case, even if they can't point at hard numbers, if they're saying that it's the case, that in itself is a big thing, I think, so that qualifies.
So, on to the bullshit predictions. These are much less difficult, much less clear in terms of if they happen, sort of saying that they actually happen.
They include words like relevant and important.
Yep, and revel. Well,
mine is
harsh to revel.
But true. mine is that this is actually reasonably solid. I think we're going to see a Linux by default, either desktop, laptop, mini PC, sub notebook, like the Asus, for example, a proper Linux PC in a major high street retailer, in store, not just on the website, or in a supermarket next year.
So you're talking in England, places like Currys and Dixon's. In the US, you're talking about
Fry's, Egghead, or New Egg.
You could
or
say that that's happening already with the Walmart thing.
Well, and in fact, when I realised today that somebody had said they're in Toys R Us in the UK. And
the PC is, yeah.
Didn't Leeds from Hashlug Radio get his from PC World, wherever the hell he is.
Hong Kong.
If they have PC World. But yeah, I'm talking somewhere like Asda or Tesco or if Sainsbury's, if they do that kind of thing. Yeah. A real high street chain.
A genuine,
a very visible.
Yeah, the kind of store that's in every town or city.
So mums and dads of the world can go in and buy one.
Yeah.
Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen?
McDonald's.
Anyway,
free with Happy Meal.
Let's move away from the crack pipe.
I predict this year will be a good year to be Simon Phipps, because I think Open Solaris will gain significant mind share.
It will reach the heady heights of BSD.
BSD has significant mind share.
You know what it is.
So
we have a definition of significant mind share.
But like, a lot of people, people know what BSD is. They know that they know it's like a Unix-like operating system. I think people will, with Project Indiana, you will no longer be thought of as a weird freak.
They're going to go from just FIPPO and
his two mates running it.
Yeah, to four people.
significant being more than that.
That's doubling in mindshare. That's probably qualified.
The thing is, right, as you were saying earlier, when Project Indiana does a proper full release, it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, yes. I think it'll take off. I think it'll be.
So they well
I don't think many people are going to care. Actually,
the Open Solaris Snowball.
I'll be very surprised, but you know. I'm not to comment. My fluffy.
I was just going to say this doesn't count as desktops though. It's a server operating system, so it will be just on servers.
Really? They're pimping it as a desktop operating system.
That's what Project Indiana was.
I thought Project Indiana was... Yeah, no, we're not
They're not really pimping it as a desktop operating system.
They're all about plugging cameras in and shit.
They're talking about...
That's not what servers are for.
They're talking about developers living in their development environments. Anyway.
Yes. I think the deciding factor is going to be drivers anyway.
Pat Finch is going to write in and beat the shit out of us for being wrong again, isn't he?
He is if you're saying it's going to be a desktop operating system.
Yeah.
My fluffy prediction is that we are going to see, and this is very fluffy, we're going to see a significant number of Linux, of OEMs taking Linux on. So I think we're going to see a lot more Dells. Not necessarily the size of Dell, you know, I mean, I think HP are the next biggest.
Toshiba and Fujitsu and people
but
like
I think
that.
We're, yeah, Toshiba and that I think we're sort gonna of thing. See people like Toshiba and Acer, and we're going to see... people like, this is like, I'm not saying these are going to happen, but people like Lenovo and these kind of hardware manufacturers, but also we're going to see more sub notebooks. We're going to see more mid devices, like, you know, mobile internet devices. I think we're just going to see a lot more across the board. I don't think it's just going to be one distro. I think we'll see a range of different distros. But I think 2008 is going to be the year of the Linux OEM desktop.
Okay. And my prediction is you're going to see Google Android have a significantly disruptive effect on the mobile phone market.
You're obsessed with the word disruptive tonight.
I am.
By the end disruptive of, technology.
By the end of 2008, which is a bit ambitious because it's not coming out till the middle of 2008, I don't think. But I think that'd be a brilliant thing to see, and I think it's going to happen.
So, are we all prepared to be wrong again next year?
Absolutely.
Yep.
So we're not just wrong, we're just laughably wrong. Everyone looks like, God, I'd forgotten about that. No, that didn't have an impact.
We've been a bit more adventurous in these predictions, I think.
Yes.
So, we'll see what happens in the coming year. It's going to be an exciting year for Linux.
Tell us what you think is going to happen in 2008 on the forums.
Send in your predictions to the forums and to show@lugradio.org, and it'd be nice for us to maybe... maybe talk next year.
Laugh at people who've got it wrong.
Yeah, if nothing else, we'll laugh at your name.
Hi, my name is Greg Crowhartman, and you're listening to Lug Radio.
Right, earlier in the show, we were telling you, you lucky, lucky people, can win an Asus
Chris Waddle.
PC.
Yes.
So, this is your chance. We're going to tell you what you've got to do now to enter the competition, and it could be yours.
It could be yours. The idea is that we want to spread the word of Lug Radio. We've been trying to do this for a while, and we're shit at it, to be honest. We want more people to listen to the show, and, we've been working hard on Season 5, but we have a lack of materials that we can use to demonstrate what Lug Radio is. So, the idea of this competition is that we would like you, listeners, to produce some promotional materials about Lug Radio. Now, it's not about Lug Radio Live. It's not about a specific season of Lug Radio. It's about the show Lug Radio.
So, in general.
So this can be anything. It can be a video. It can be audio. It can be a brochure. It can be
Radio is the medium of dance.
Exactly. We produce a poster using your mad graphic skills. Take a 30-second video and put it on YouTube.
Yeah, or an audio clip or...
Yeah, I mean, it can be anything. The key thing is it's got to be about the show. Now, you might want to talk about the concepts. So if people describe Lug Radio, they typically say, you know, it's fairly irreverent. We cover open source. It's quite humorous.
We talk nonsense.
We have a small magnetic device, a small buzzing device called the Finger of God. Whatever you like.
It's all about Jono.
It's basically me. It's Jono Bacon and three other people.
This is pretty free form, really. You can submit your entry in pretty much any medium or format that you'd like, be it video, audio,
anything you feel comfortable in doing a good job in, really.
Yeah, something to promote the show. I mean, a couple of vaguely important points there. We're not looking for you to actually do the promotion with thing. You know, just produce the materials. You don't have to do anything with them other than send them to us.
It's something we can use when promoting the show. Like, if you write a blog entry, I mean, Chris said this earlier on, if you write a blog entry promoting the show, that doesn't count. But if you produce a video or an audio thing, whatever, that does
count. If you paint Lug Radio in the sky in gold, then, I mean, that's nice, but that's not going to let... You're not going to win, because that's the promotion itself. It's the material that we're looking for.
Second thing is, please don't send us 400 megabyte videos. I mean, try and keep these things quite short anyway. If you're doing a video, make it, 30 seconds or a minute. If you're doing audio, make it a minute long or whatever. Yeah. But don't send them to show@lugradio.org because it makes Gmail cry.
An important thing to stress here is that do not send any entries, any content, any video files or audio files or images, whatever, to show@lugradio.org. Put them online somewhere. Stick them on Flickr, stick them on YouTube or Blip TV or whatever. Or
upload them to Rapid Share or something
If you have a problem and you can't upload it somewhere, get in touch with us and we'll sort something out. But just do not send us files.
No, just send us a link.
Yeah, send us
if
a
you
link.
Send us a file, we'll not only reject your entry, but we'll take the piss out of your name as well.
And you'll cry.
And the other thing is, a whole batch full of rules here, but, free laptop. The entries need to be under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
Yes.
So we can use them, we can make them part of the show and all that. Yes. And, we want to encourage more Creative Commons content. The last couple of shows we've done have been under precisely that license. So if you want to snip bits out of those shows as part of it, then go for it. Absolutely.
The thing is, as well, is you can put as many entries in as you want and be creative. I mean, if you want to do something serious, go ahead. If you want to do something crazy. The thing you might want to look at in terms of videos is we did a couple of promotional videos for Lug Radio Live. We did a funny one and we did a serious one. You know, that's just our attempt at doing it. You can do what you want.
You can do better.
But it's got to be about Lug Radio, not about Lug Radio Live.
Roger Light did a parody of one of those videos.
That's fucking brilliant.
And it was fantastic.
So you can't just send that one in, by the way.
Yeah.
So we've already seen that.
So which web address is at going to set up for where people can get more information about the competition?
Lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio.
It's pimpmylugradio.
Judge's decision is final.
Send your entries to show@lugradio.org and talk about it on the forums. And when are we going to close the dead? What's the deadline for this?
The deadline's going to be somewhere around the middle of January.
So basically three shows time.
You've got a little while. It doesn't have to be in before Christmas or anything, but equally don't forget about it until January the 11th or anything.
Yeah. We will mention the specific deadline in future shows, but basically three shows from now, we're going to close.
You'll get a bit of advance warning, but yes, we love you all. We've got this PC. We'd like to give it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great piece of kit.
Basically, there's four of us. We've only got one. We couldn't decide which one of us should keep it. So we're giving it away.
Everyone voted for himself.
Yeah. We were giving it in order to give it away, you cheeky git.
Even the Lug Radio finger of God couldn't decide. And we may fill it with filth before we send it to you.
We will not be filling you with filth.
We'll maybe remove all the filth.
We'll delete all the filth before it gets sent.
But yes, Mr. Sweet.
So put your entry somewhere online and send us a link to show@lugradio.org.
And good luck.
We have lots and lots of emails.
Loads.
And part of the reason we have lots and lots of emails is because everyone in the entire world has written in to say, in your segment on virtualization, you didn't mention that VirtualBox exists and it does coherence mode, okay? We get it. Shut the fuck up. We got like 40 emails. We know we're very... Well, I was going to say we're very sorry, but I didn't know anyway. Adam and Chris are very sorry. We were at loss of who to have executed this week until all these emails came in. Yeah. So Adam's widowed girlfriend would like us to apologise on his behalf. We now know about VirtualBox. We're sorry. Please stop sending us emails.
Hey, Adam's widow's girlfriend.
Don't even think about it.
Okay.
Back from the dead just to stop you.
Getting your cock out, striding over my cold, dead corpse.
That's a lovely image.
Just a very brief point. One of the people who wrote in there to say VirtualBox was Red. And he said, P.S. looking forward to the next boot Jono in the Spuds section. And I completely agree with you there, pal. I said you should win the T-shirt, but I was voted down.
So you see, it's clear that I get bullied every episode. It's bullying. This is victimization, right. That's what it is.
Yeah, you're the
Someone mentioned
victim.
On the Wolves Lug list today that they'd like to see you electrocuted four times every show.
Really?
And I'm all for that.
It was a popular request, yes.
Not going to that.
Read an email.
Stupid Lug. shall I start?
Yep.
Okay, we've had an email from Campbell Barton, who is IdeasMan42, who you might know from the forums. So Campbell, if it's the same Campbell, I'm assuming it's the same Campbell.
God, he's dropped us in the soup, hasn't he?
I was trying to think of a soup-related gag.
It really wasn't worth it.
Right, anyway, he says, hey, it's Campbell from Australia, mailed in a few times before. My girlfriend has girlfriend that has a soft spot for the deep voice presenter, referring to Mr. Sweet.
Adamski himself.
Hello. Yeah.
Oh, it's him.
He's like, hello. Hello. Hello.
Five people laughing at that gag. One of which is the Hervey. You were interested in what people are up to. I'm working on the next Blender 3D Open movie, which is the Peach Project that we've mentioned before.
This is the sequel to Elephant's Dream.
And an open game later on. It's like Elephant's Dream, but has a plot that isn't freaking weird and has furry things. He's working as a...
Because fur's harder. It's like, oh shit, the Monsters, Inc. people did it ages ago, so now we can do it.
Yeah, that guy on the forums who's into furries, he's auditioning for the movie. Anyway, he's working there as a developer, sysadmin, render monkey. Isn't that the thing that...
Isn't that the program they use?
And that's Render Man.
I think that is, and that's Pixar anyway.
It's Render Man, but it's written in mono.
It's the previous generation.
No, it's a Mozilla project.
Anyway, he says, this movie's furry and funny, very lowbrow. You guys would like it. Thanks a fucking bunch. We're using Ubuntu, Gutsy, Blender, and the GIMP, of course. It's heaps of fun. Something that happened the other day you might find amusing. One of the artists is a total Apple fanboy. I have to listen to him brainwash the less technical people about The Wonders of Leopard. I try not to grit my teeth. Anyway, he was saying how great iMovie was and put on a new Mac laptop. Unloading it actually managed to cause a Mac kernel panic. And the resulting video was bollocks. And all sorts of trouble getting a usable format out of it. Leopard broke codecs that worked before, etc. The upshot is that we're using Blender for video editing now, adding markers, DV non-square pixel support. I assume that's a good thing. Better clip cutting.
It sounds brilliant.
Better clip thing. Snaping. I'm assuming that's snapping, or possibly snaping.
Maybe it's being attacked by Severus Snape out of the Harry Potter films.
A sexual maneuver by... Yeah. I know Blender isn't something you give to your gran to use. But having any usable video edit in Linux is really great. And a usable video edit that's got 5 million buttons is particularly good. He didn't say that. We can import DV from Kino, edit with Blender, and upload OGG files to the blog. The audience might be interested to know what's going on, and it's going to be in the next release of Blender. Check out the progress, and we should plug peach.blender.org. And I have to say, I've subscribed to their RSS feed, and it looks like they're doing some really great work. I've seen some like little animations that they've been working on, and it's looking fucking fantastic. So
cool.
Keep up the great work. It's great to know that a Lug Radio fan is on the Peach team. So yes,
excellent.
You're not winning a T-shirt because you live in fucking Australia. Although, you know, I'm not going to speak too soon.
Next email.
Am I next? I've got an email from Mr. Ben. The lovely Ben Thorpe. He says, "Season's greetings. I just wanted to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And the same to you."
Thank you.
Sounds like 2008 is going to be very full for Lug Radio. Yeah, not kidding.
You're not wrong. And you, Squire, when we start talking about Lug Radio Live.
Yes, he said he can't wait for news of Lug Radio Live 08 as well.
Well, so, you know, patience is a virtue.
So are contracts.
Speaking of which, he suggests a replacement for Adam Sweet's Gong a Thong extravaganza to be Stuart Langridge's Breast and Dest. What do you reckon, Ack? Willing to allow your man baps for good tours?
No. Frankly. Also, as a free bonus, I know what we're doing with the Gong thing this year, and you don't, Mr. Ben, and it's going to be a lot better than that.
I never want to see your moves.
This from Mr. Bacon, a man who let one nut dangle out when we were at Quadec. So you shut the fuck up. One thing I don't want to see again is waking up in the morning and seeing one fucking spud hanging out of your boxes.
Thank you.
As you lay splayed across the bed.
Bacon
Thank you
and
for that
egg.
Image. Yeah.
How do you like your eggs?
Fertilized.
Okay, I guess it's my turn. I've got an email here from Thomas Cameron. And he's replying to our segment when we were on about last week about HPUX and AIX and so on.
HP sucks.
Yes. And he says, from my limited experience with AIX and even more limited experience with HPUX, there's very little real difference. AIX from IBM has LVM. Guess what? Linux has LVM. The reality of this situation is that each of the big name Unix vendors are contributing lots of work to Linux, and most of the Unix shops are actually switching to Red Hat Enterprise Linux and SLES or another major pay-for distro. For the record, I hope in a year's time Ubuntu Server will be a serious contender in the enterprise server market.
Sing it, brother.
Right. Although I use it as my primary server OS, it's lacking some features that enterprises want. He doesn't say what those are. But
it's having the word enterprise in the name of the product.
Yeah.
May well be.
a chap here called Robert Prendergast writes in, makes...
What, is he a US cop? All US cops are called Pendergast or whatever it's called. Particularly, I think it's in Falling Down with Michael Douglas.
So, in fact, no US cops are called Prendergast. I thought they were called TJ Hooker.
No.
Hardcastle and McCormack.
Jake Stride, PI.
He runs Synobian or whatever they're called.
Synobian.
Jake Stride, PI.
Extra from...
He just sounds like a private investigator, Jake Stride. Anyway, yeah, Robert Prendergast says very similar things to your chap there, really. As far as HPUX and AIX go, you're quite right in saying they're entirely too expensive. Unless you happen to be a bank, I can't see the point in using either version.
Not a bank.
And he also says, the Tadpole Spark laptops that we mentioned. He says, don't waste your time, they're shit. I had an evaluation unit. So he says they're
the
really...
voice of the people.
he says they're really quite shit. They're made by General Dynamics, who are apparently a government contractor to make like military aircraft and submarines and stuff.
And washing machines.
And they're interested in selling 10,000 of these things at once, so you won't get any decent service from them, and their price is high because they don't want to deal with you grubby little poor person. So that wasn't the email I actually wanted to read. There's one from Leo Howell. Who says, as you said, there have been evil things posted on forums by people who should know better. What can we do? And he says, we must be careful of anything done as pseudo. But this is a red herring. Beware root is good advice for fresh-faced sysadmins of multi-user systems, but I would hope that not too many of these are left unsupervised and turning to forums for basic tasks. Essentially, Leo's argument is people should be better educated than they currently are.
Yes, quite true.
Yeah. Which Chris agrees with. I'm not 100% convinced that the way into getting more people to work with Linux is making sure they all become slightly more sysadmin-y than they are at the moment, because most people just don't give a toss.
But I don't see there's any other... Sorry, I'm interrupting your email.
You
should try to block pseudo. You should block pseudo, but that only stubs part of the problem. The only way to do it is education.
He does make a very good point, which is that most people aren't sysadmins and multi-user systems anyway. The part of the system that's most at risk for ordinary users is their data, which they can happily blow away without pseudo.
Yeah, exactly.
The point is not just sudo, it's people running commands. rm-rf.home is just as bad.
I have an amusing conference story related to that. At the UDS, there was a guy who left his laptop unlocked and went out to go and grab a cup of coffee.
Fatal error.
So, do you know what someone did? They opened a terminal and they typed in hash rm-rf and jacked up the font size and just left it flashing there. And he got back and he just started giggling. The other thing I have discovered is I'm sure it's in Fedora as well, but I know it's in Ubuntu, is if you lock your screen, there's a little button where you can leave people messages.
Yeah, yes. It's good, isn't it?
That's amazing fun at a conference.
Yeah, it is. It's wicked. There was a thing on the Daily WTF about what people did when they left their screen unlocked at work. And there were loads of amusing stories about, people went and installed Upside Down to Net. and all this kind of thing. And then you had a load of really humorous people going, well, I think that's enormously unprofessional, and how could you possibly bear to do this kind of thing? And everyone else going, what, man? It's just funny. Fucking chill out. But, sending emails to everybody.
It's great, isn't it, when you take a screenshot of, someone's machine and set it as their wallpaper?
Yeah.
Trying to move a window out of the way.
And then remove all the icons. That's a classic. That's a classic.
That's how they're trying to move this window. And they're like, what the fuck is
it? It's not... Why isn't it working?
I froze it.
I have to restart the machine and it starts again.
It's just the same, it's just comedy, endless comedy. To be honest with you, it's the 21st century equivalent of stretching cling film over the bog bowl, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, it is amusing to immature people like us.
I have to say, I really like the sound of the Upside Down to Net.
Have you not seen that?
No,
some guy, his neighbours were sharing his wireless without his consent, so he split his network into two halves. A safe half and an unsafe half, and then he chucked the unsafe half through a squid transparent squid proxy on his network and had it, so every time they browsed the web, every time it got an image, squid got it first and then used image magic to turn it upside down before it fed it to them, so every page they looked at had all the images upside down. Genius. And there was kitten net as well, which turned all the pictures into pictures of kittens. Don't share this bloke's internet.
I tell you what, I'm
pleased. He got XKCD, the guy. He was well proud of that.
I am quite pleased that I'm quite pleased that I can now go to the toilet in a Lug Radio session and I don't have my homepage set to meat spin. I think it's only the last couple of episodes. Like, for the last 2 years, this seems to have been going on. My homepage has been set to something offensive.
We're just lulling you into a false sense of security. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah. You see, it wasn't always set to meat spin. Sometimes it was set to, 30 different tabs, all of which were meat spin.
Yeah, that was fun.
Or lemon party, occasionally.
I hate to be grumpy, but you're going to shout at me about the length of my email, and you're going to complain about the length of the segment. So I think whoever's next should carry on.
I will go. We've had an email from Chris Fletcher. And his subject line is, you dirty, cheating fuckers.
That's very kind of
you. Hello to you, too.
And fuck you, too.
And he starts the email with, hey, wankers. This guy's someone you'd want to take home to.
Fan of the show.
Ladies former Q, he's going to take him home to meet your parents. Thanks for doing my best distro test.
Was he the Slackware guy? Ah, lose.
However, I could hear the switch going click when you turned it off. All I can say is that you're a bunch of dirty, cheating bastards. I hope your chooks turn into emus.
Chooks, that's chickens in English. Australian.
I hope your chooks turn into emus or emus.
Fucking emus.
Brief pause while Jono translates from Australian.
And kick your dunny doors down. Speak English!
Toilet doors.
Best regards, Chris Fletcher, Bright Sparks, Internet for Schools, A Division of Split P Technologies, PL Phone, 1300-650.
Oh. Probably. You spanner.
Well, he shouldn't...
Honestly.
Shouldn't complain about being harshly treated.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, yeah, we did turn the thing off, but that's because you're the world definition of fail, because you like Slackware, so...
Yeah, so...
love you too, big fan of the show.
Yeah, he's just come back for another round of kind, hasn't he?
He feels the kind overflowing at this point. Bloody Slackware fan.
The kind runneth over.
Christopher Proctor.
Esquire.
The proctologist speaks.
He peers into dirty rings.
Right, don't start saying this now, because he's going to say the magic cut the segment word, and then we're going to have to start again.
We'll have to start all over again.
It's the Lug Radio kill key.
We've got an email from Gary Adamson.
Would you like to speak into the microphone?
It's not Jerry Adamson, anyway.
Hello.
No, it's Gary Adamson.
Oh, okay, I'll go away.
Leader of Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin.
No.
He basically is just saying most car CD players these days have the capability to play MP3 and WMA files, so why not OGG? Would it really be that difficult for manufacturers to include the appropriate codec? I suspect not, but they just don't know what it is.
Right. I asked this question on my blog a long time ago, and I think I picked
up... Did you mention the word Viagra at any point?
No.
We should laugh slightly about how Adam's blog was owned.
you know what?
No, it was actually genuinely selling Viagra. Yeah, is this something not working out?
Shush. I was thinking about 5 minutes ago. Nobody's mentioned it yet, and I think I'm going to get away with this. Yeah, shut up.
Make a mistake on this show, you die.
Yes.
Pooned. You can go to Viagra.Adam's sweet dog. Yeah.
Sorry. I was asking this about a year ago on my blog, and I think what the problem is that basically... Rather than doing everything in software on these devices, yes, they normally use a decoder chip.
Yes.
And there aren't that many decoder chips that do OGG.
That do OGG, quite right.
They should make one and flog it on the website.
DSPs these days. Is this
the same reason as
them.
Most MP3 players don't do OGG?
Yes.
Yes, essentially, because they're done by... A lot of the DSPs, digital signal processor chips, the stuff is done in kind of firmware on the chip.
Right.
So it would be theoretically possible for... Even if they're not putting OGG in, it'd be possible for the free software community to write OGG code for the DSP, but no one documents how their DSP works. It's all highly, highly proprietary information.
This is a good point to mention this, because I wanted to mention this a couple of shows ago, or in a couple of shows' time. But Noros...
How very specific of you.
No, it was something I wanted to mention in the show at some point. Noros have successfully negotiated with Texas Instruments for Texas Instruments to provide their toolchain for their DSP chips.
Nice! That's a really... I mean,
Noros fucking PR wire.
No, I came across it when we were thinking of doing something else about the Noros.
Hang on, what does that mean? Why should
basically,
we care?
That means what Noros's aim is that we will be able to feed these chips with open source codecs. Like OGG.
That's excellent. I had an Archos PMA 400 played video, played audio and so on, and that had DSPs in it, and there was no documentation for it, because Archos had received the documentation from, I think it was Texas Instruments, under an NDA, and then wouldn't release it.
Right.
So you had to, if you wanted OGG to play back on the device, you had, even though the device ran Linux, if you wanted OGG to play it back, you had to play it back in software, which means it ate the battery.
Yes. Right.
The point
is,
if you hand this stuff off to the DSP, then you could do it with little CPU use and little battery use. If you do it in software on the CPU, Nokia are apparently having similar issues.
Let's not
with...
get into Nokia.
No, apparently having similar issues with, that's one of the reasons why they say there's no OGG support by default on the N800, N810. Even ignoring the submarine patents thing, and now we hate them. But yeah, anyway, yes. Moving on.
Well, I was going to say, just a quick point. I remember the days when I had a Pentium 2 and it struggled to play in MP3s.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that a lot of these devices are obviously embedded. And
they're all running sort of 400 megahertz ARM.
So you can see why this is a real problem. So anyway.
Can I wrap that up, by the way?
Wrap away.
Basically, what you get under this thing with Neurus and Texas Instruments is you'll get the tool chain to develop for the chip. The details are on the Neurus website, if you look for it.
Which is adamsweet.org/Neurus.
No. I don't even know what the Neurus website is, actually, off the top of my head.
You can always email them at adamsweet@neurus.org.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
At least you're not asking for a fucking job like Ravel did.
I was just halfway through. I just said Gizza, and then you said, at least you're not asking for a job.
I think it's neurusaudio.com, isn't it? Or it might be neuro.me.uk, because that's Neuro's website.
The one thing you don't get as part of this agreement is...
Working video?
Shut your face, man. Is you don't get the debugger. Normally all this tool chain costs thousands and thousands of dollars. They're providing it free to open source developers, but you don't get the debugger, unfortunately.
Right. Isn't that a place in Norway?
No, shut up.
That's Oslo.
You're on about Zeebrugger, aren't you?
And that, yes.
I'm sure is in the Netherlands.
Which is not in Norway anyway.
That's a German debugger.
Zeebrugger. Okay, I guess we'll move on.
Isn't he that guy who does
now.
The video podcasts?
What? That's Leo Laporte.
Next email.
Okay, I've got an email here from Andrew somebody. Sorry, I haven't got
your interesting surname.
Andrew somebody. And all right, this is going to take me a while to read. There's quite a bit of it, but I would like to read it all.
What's the subject line, Adam?
I have no. Shut your face, smart ass.
What's the subject line, Adam?
The subject line is apologies, Mr. Bacon.
Thank you.
I nearly said the magic lug radio kill switch then. No prizes for guessing. Okay, so. Hi guys, remember a while back, Jono had a rant about people who had a holier-than-thou attitude to software freedom but continues to use binary drivers. Well, when I read this, I agreed with your sentiments and promptly removed my binary NVIDIA drivers. A while later, I decided to quit my job and leave for a less stressful position at another company.
McDonald's.
Shut up. Upon arrival, I sat down only to find a Windows desktop at my workstation. I tried to get along with it as best as I could, but eventually I asked if I could install a Linux partition, as I spent most of my time frustrated with it. This was fine, but obviously I couldn't afford to wrestle with the hardware and the machine. Being spawned from Satan, aka Dell. This machine, being spawned from Satan, aka Dell, was possessed by an ATI card. Knowing that ATI cards are problematic and that Ubuntu provides a one-click I hate freedom button, I installed the beloved brown desktop on desktop. Fortunately, all went well and I could do my job. And since then, people have had various problems with their proprietary operating system, printing, creating PDFs, sharing files, all of which have been addressed by letting the Andrews machine do it. Since then, the other developer and sysadmin have both started using Linux for their everyday tasks. We now have Linux file server, production mail server, and web servers are running Linux. And after last week's board meeting, I had senior editors requesting to have their 25 desktop machines running Linux because Andrew's machine is the only one that works. All our tools and software, including the ones I'm developing, all have an emphasis on being cross-platform now too.
Fantastic.
Excellent. So it seems there is a point to having binary drivers available, and to some extent. And I was to some extent wrong. For that, I apologize. I still don't use the binary NVIDIA driver at home, and I've been given an Intel-only machine for work. Had the binary driver not worked, I doubt that my work situation would be the same. Ideally, people would understand the freedom mentality behind Linux, but for now, this will do. The coolest thing about it all was that I did absolutely no pimping of the software at all. People saw it working, were able to rely on it because they want it, they are willing to make some fairly hefty concessions in regard to what software they're willing to run. Many thanks for the great show, Andrew.
What a great story.
That is a good story. And I think that bloke should win the T-shirt.
I think he should definitely win
the T-shirt. Best email of the show.
So he promises to wear it to work.
I thought he should have won the T-shirt just when you read out the subject line. Wow. That's a great story. It's great to sort of... It's heartening when you hear shit like that.
It is, isn't it? I really enjoyed reading... That's why I wanted to read the whole thing, because it was a really good story, and I really enjoyed reading that email when it came into the show at lugradio.org.
We love to hear about these success stories, so do send them in.
Unfortunately, the bad news for Lug Radio is that it Andrew somebody lives in Australia again, so that's the second set of postage to Australia we've got to.
But yes,
Andrew, we're going to have to get Paul Sladen to deliver it.
And Andrew, please send us your postal address
and size,
and size, and a Lug Radio t-shirt will be winging its way to you just as soon as we have some Lug Radio t-shirts.
Yes, Mr. Langridge.
That's not my fault.
Yes, it is.
In what way is it my fault?
You're responsible for liaising with our resident designer, and he hasn't responded to us. Therefore, it's your fault.
Okay.
And also, the t-shirt printer is in your fucking town. Right? So there's no excuse. But yes, the t-shirt's very cool. You're going to love the t-shirt when we send it over to Outer Billabong, wherever it is.
Okay, so
let's talk about Lug Radio Live.
And the very, fact
that
very briefly.
And the fact that we haven't got much to say about it. Well, rest assured, Lug Radio Live in the UK is being organised. We're just about to confirm the venue, and we're hoping to confirm the dates and that over the next couple of weeks. And Lug Radio Live in the US, we have found a venue. It is in San Francisco, and we're hoping to confirm the dates for that also over the next couple of weeks. We're currently dealing with contracts there. Lug Radio Live, we're not going to say anything about when the dates are, because we don't want to give incorrect dates out again. But it won't be the same dates that were confirmed beforehand for Lug Radio Live in the US, so don't buy plane tickets.
Yeah, but they're not going to be too far away from that.
Yeah, maybe about a month.
Shut up! We're not confirming the dates. But yeah, we're currently suffering the pain and agony of dealing with contracts and dealing with the union. And
fucking
so,
unions.
Yeah. What the hell is that in America, by the way?
American arseholes.
Well done with that one, by the way.
Yeah,
half our listenership turns up.
But yes,
mate, all that stuff that we're dealing with for the US is making it a bit like wading through treacle a little bit. Yeah. But it's going to happen. So is the UK.
We'd like to thank our friends who have been organising much of this over in the US. So they know who they are, and we will be announcing who they are.
Yeah,
when we announce the dates,
and we do deeply appreciate
we
it.
We do.
Thank you for all the hard work you've done.
They've been very, very good.
And patient, you
know, apart from that Australian bastard.
That shovel bastard. But rest assured, the event's going to happen in the UK, it's going to happen in the US, and both events are going to be stunning. And we're going to need a lot of help for them, for sure, because
we are.
I mean, one Lug Radio Live takes a long time to organise, let alone two. Yeah. So, but yes, so I think we pretty much... Well, usual, get in touch with the show at lugradio.org, go to the forums, forums.lugradio.org, enter the competition, Pimp My Lug Radio.
Yep, and that's lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio.
And obviously, you can win yourself an EEPC, which is fantastic.
Come along and shoot at other geeks at clanlugradio.org.
Yes, indeed.
We play Wolf E.T. Every Wednesday and every Sunday night.
We haven't read out any forums posts on this episode, but there's been loads of great forums discussion there. One thread that I posted there I'd like to point people towards is a thread asking what people think of Season 5, because we've really tried to improve the
John's
show.
Ego needs stroking.
Basically. No. No, we want to hear whether we're doing the right thing with Season 5.
Yep. Send an email to ego@johnobacon.org.
There's been some great comments there of what people think is working, what people think isn't working.
Yeah. So, don't be, if you've got something bad to say, don't be afraid to say it.
Yeah.
All criticism gratefully received.
Yeah, I mean, don't just piss and moan. But it, you don't do this or you do this too much. Don't do that. Say something constructive and quantifiable. I mean,
one thing you shouldn't complain about is the length of this episode, which we realise is a little longer than usual. But it's a Christmas special.
Last year's
Jono
Christmas
just won't shut up.
Last year's Christmas special was 2 hours.
Was it?
Yeah.
Two hours.
We suck at keeping shows short.
So, but this is a Christmas special. Compliment for keeping the shows reasonable. But I think that was actually keeping them longer. in the tide of keep them down to 10 minutes or whatever it was.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Cool. So another show in the can, and have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much.
See you next year.
Have a great Christmas.
We'll see you in 2008.
Have a great new year, and we'll see you in 2008.